Welcome to Titanic.
This is Tech Heresy Podcast 5002. I'm Spank Jones, the bastard operator from your mom. All right, Evil C in the house. Yeah, we got Bag. Yeah, so the title for our segment is Shift Canned.
So I guess you want an introduction to the subject.
Yeah.
This week. So the subject is memristors, and not memristors specifically, but what this might mean for the computer industry, say, 5 years from now. For anyone who isn't familiar with it, a memristor is an electrical component, a passive electrical component that can change its resistance based on a ramp of current, and then that'll change it to a resistance of higher or lower, and then you can change it back later. So it becomes a single component bit.
Well, I just wanted to add a little something to that. I think that it's a fundamental component, like an inductor,
yeah,
or a capacitor or a resistor, and up to a certain point back in the 70s, I guess it was a theoretical fundamental component, but now it's actually being proven. So
yeah,
go with that.
Yeah, so instead of things like the way that you'd represent a bit in electronics now, like with a flip flop or with a flash memory cell, you actually can just change the resistor itself, and it becomes a memory component. And no one had actually been able to develop such a thing until last year. Last year being 2008, HP came out with a big announcement, and it was one of the ironic things is that it was something that wasn't really possible until you get down to extremely, extremely fine manufacturing capability. And so it's kind of a compelling thing, and it's very fast. They say it's about a tenth the speed of DRAM right now, and since it is so compact, there's a lot of potential for them to be able to do manufacturing of enormous capacity.
Right, because the effect actually gets stronger. The memory resistance itself gets stronger the smaller it is.
Right. And it's really it really starts becoming effective when you're in the realm of like 32 nanometer fabrication. Okay, so that all set up is this idea of like, okay, so you have this memristor device that's, who knows, like maybe it's half a terabyte or a terabyte box. It's a little, maybe the size of like a 1/8 inch laptop hard drive. And it's nearly the speed of RAM. And it's kind of an interesting idea. Like if somebody came out with such a product, if HP came out with a product, they'd sell like hotcakes. But the more interesting question is, how would this change computer architecture? Because right now, and for the past, I don't know, 35 years, maybe more, 40 years, operating system development has really kind of focused around this one paradigm of you have the resistors on the chip, and you may have a cache in between that and a working memory, and that working memory is then is dynamic and can be lost with power loss. And then you have a permanent storage, which is a lot larger. And maybe that was tape, or maybe that was hard disks. And today, of course, it's hard disks, hard drives, or solid state drives, like flash drives. And but that working memory is volatile. So you lose power and come back up, and then the machine's in a clean state. So there's difference between the working memory of the machine and the permanent storage. This permanent storage has mechanisms to keep it a lot more organized and in place, and a corruption at that point is a lot more catastrophic to the operation of the machine, I feel, because it means data loss. Like you have a file system corruption, true file system corruption, you have data loss. The machine, if the working memory gets corrupted because of malloc or all these other things, programs start misbehaving, that may lead to data loss, but most likely just leads to needing to reboot and restart fresh. So what happens? What if you had to all to do over again with a memristor approach? So instead of having a working memory and then a very large permanent storage, you just had this enormous working memory. So you had your CPU and half a terabyte of memristor memory, and that's it. And when you pulled the power and turned it back on, the memory was exactly where it was to start with. And so how would that change the way you'd approach computing? Would you not deal with files anymore? Would you just be instantiating objects into that memristor memory and then manipulating them? Would you it changes a lot of the way that we even think about how to structure programs or operating systems. And so that was the topic for today. That's what I had proposed. So I'm very, very curious to hear Spank and Evil C's take on it. So I guess I'll open it up to you guys.
Well, I just, you know, the thing when you had initially brought this up, it made me think of, you know, what are the are there any competing ideas to this, and what technologies do we have right now that are also somewhat of a shift in thinking? So, for instance, I think, you know, this technology at least is at least being championed by HP a lot, and I like to talk about, you know, who's behind it and those sorts of things, right? So there's a huge research effort, a lot of money coming from HP into figuring out how to do this. Yeah, I think, you know, they definitely want to productize it. You know, they want to make it into NVRAM and then kind of go from there.
They wouldn't be the ones with this, like IBM was with the giant magnetoresistive effect,
right,
in the 90s with the hard drives, yeah.
So, and now there are, I don't know if you saw this, but there's an Ars Technica article about memristors, and then, you know, there's a bit in there about how IBM's got actually a competing thing called racetrack memory. And I don't know if you've seen this as well, but
I have. And in the most recent Scientific American, there's an article about racetrack memory that's really, really interesting.
Yeah. So I think there's somewhat competing.
Where's racetrack memory?
Yeah. So these are nano tubes that are bent in a particular way that allow you to create a stack on this one little nanotube, and then you can basically put them in a series and then have a stack across all these different series. What? That's essentially what I understood it to be, is that there's a electronic effect that you can.
Yeah, it's a spin electronic effect. And what it is, it worked kind of like bubble memory, where you you have this racetrack, and it's just imagine a single loop of wire, and it doesn't move. This is all solid state. And what happens, you put down spin domains of electricity on the wire. So you're changing the electron spin throughout the wire as zeros and ones, and then you can use magnetism to shift that whole set of domains in a circle. Like, so it's those electrons are spinning in a circle through the wire, and you can make them move incredibly fast. I mean, the speed of light, and that's how you read the memory back. That's how you write it. With bubble memory, you could do this, but it was all magnetism, and it required very, very sophisticated magnetic field manipulation. And this is a lot simpler. And again, this is that's a total IBM thing, and that also has a lot of promise.
I'm always thinking about buffer overflows and like a lot of like exploits and things like that that you are able to do on a memory stack. And I started thinking about crazy stuff and the possibilities of what happens when those exploits are
overflowing on your hard drive. It's
exactly
total madness, total chaos.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that really, you know, started making me think about a lot of different things. Yeah. I don't know. I was just thinking, so those are all the things that kind of came into my mind, you know. I suppose, you know, we can kind of flesh those out a little more, but I want to hear what Evil C's got.
Yeah.
Well, I'm thinking more I guess at a higher level, well, abstraction level, in terms of, I like this whole idea of, like, essentially it's like instant on access, right? That's really what we're getting. For all these three different technologies, it's all.
Yeah, it's like a light switch kind of a thing, yeah.
So, really, one, my first inclination was, at that point, what is the operating system really, right? I mean, your resources are very minimal at that point, right? All you have now is a processor and memory with programs just sitting there ready to go. So, like, what are the possibilities there? Like, to me, it sounds like what you really would have are people that own a crap load of data, whether they be programs or actual data. And then the processor, you could start really trying to, everything would be organized around the memory as opposed to the other way around. Right?
Oh, that's an interesting, yeah, that's interesting. Right. I hadn't thought about that.
Because now, like, you have truly, like, especially with the way, you know, shared computing is going now, like, if I just had a giant ass load, like, terabytes of cheap data, like, what I have is now, well, all I really need now is the computing power to access it, right, or to do with it what I want.
Mm-hmm. And so actually, right. And then you start to think about interconnects and things like that, which I guess you can kind of abstract down into different layers, but yeah. I hear you.
Right, like memory, what's essentially what we're talking about here is memory is now becoming truly, truly a commodity, more so than it is now. It will be cheaper per gig than...
It already seems that there's a trend anyway like that. Like, think about how people are writing distributed applications now. They have these, you know, front-end, you know, machines that are you know, doing like logic and have all the access and authentication, all that stuff. And then there's this gigantic cache, whatever it is, sitting behind that. And then you've got all your data. So,
right. So now what I'm talking about is just enormous, gigantic cache. Like,
yeah, everything's cached all the
time. Exactly. So it's like instant on, like, hey, I need this. There it is. And more so than that, you have shared, like, persistent state, right? No more loading states or anything like that. But then the downside would be, Bag had mentioned this earlier, was like, what happens if shit gets corrupted? I guess you were touching on it with the Stack Overflow, buffer overflow stuff, right?
Yeah.
Which,
yeah, what? I don't know. It's kind of nuts. I suppose there's got to be, you know, there's something that, you know, the kernel does that, you know, would essentially, I mean, there's all these really nice mechanisms now for sort of securing the stack, and, you know, so that you can do, you know, stack smashing detection and all these other kinds of interesting mechanisms.
The idea that you can lock pages in memory, that you have protected memory, that a process only has access to a certain amount of memory is, and I think that idea would still hold, that you would say this program, this operator of data can only access this data and nothing outside of it. And if it needs to access more, then there's mechanisms to do so.
I mean, I think the real application for this stuff, just coming from that perspective, then, is from the more like, you know, high-performance computing, supercomputing kind of area. I mean, obviously, those are kind of like the early adopters in some ways. For a lot of these things. Maybe I'm wrong. I could be wrong. I'm just speculating. But I think when, you know, you have something that's this powerful in terms of IOs and you know, speed and all that stuff, that's what that sort of strikes me as the first place that you would sort of see it cropping up. Do you agree with that or no?
I think with high-performance computing and computing in general that no one really talks about, it's not really necessary about the processing machine or the speed at which you can, the actual speed of the storage device itself. It's all about the interconnect. Like either one of those can be fast, but if you don't have a good interconnect, you're done. And that I think that's still there. But I mean, I always think like this. A lot of this stuff is local memory, like on the local bus of the CPU. But I mean, I guess for if you had a fast enough interconnect, like let's say in the next few years they have like 100 gigabit InfiniBand, and you have basically a giant box you know, like a half refrigerator size, like a college dorm refrigerator size box that's got like 10 petabytes in it of Amrista RAM, then it becomes kind of like the RAM server for compute machines on that network. That's actually something I thought about when I was toying with my operating system. Is you get to a point where you, when you're writing an operating system, you start saying, okay, well, how am I going to manage memory? And what semantics do I need, and what mechanisms and structures and whatnot? And one of the things I thought about, I was like, well, I would like this to be capable of doing things like NUMA. And then you start asking, saying, okay, well, if you do NUMA, then each page of memory is not just like flat. It's also got a latency with it. And it's also, it could potentially be different sized than the local allocation size. And those things start playing into account. And then you start thinking, well, what if I just had a machine that had like 2 megs of RAM and this tiny little microkernel, and it, when it needed more RAM, it allocated it over the network, which is, as long as you've got a fast enough interconnect, you could do that. But I think it's independent of this MRAM thing, though.
But, I mean, I don't know if they're going to come up with interconnects that are, I don't know, man. I mean, that seems really, like, crazy, because then you're having to have these buses on the main board that are, like, ridiculous, or you're saturating that. I mean, you know, maybe if you maybe if they make some modification of, like, hypertransport or one of these other types of, like, you know, interconnects, right? Like, I think IBM's got one, like, the... They have, you know, the whole reason they have like the X series and all of that is because of their modified interconnect that they have. And then, you know, so, and I think there was even a lot of talk before, especially in the high performance computing, about being able to bridge hypertransport buses between main boards and using that as the interconnect so that you can make like big SMP boxes, you know?
Right. That's some crazy shit.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, I think that's all out there in that realm. But you know, who I don't know who gets to touch that shit. Not me.
Yeah. But, I think that's also like some pretty hardcore electrical engineering to make that stuff work. I mean, it's one thing to have it on main board. It's another thing to have it like in a cable,
right?
Connecting two boxes.
Yeah, for sure. I don't know. You know,
if this stuff is as powerful as you're saying, I think that it's. Just adding processors to boxes is so cheap nowadays. Like they got radars on a chip for crying out loud, right? I don't think
right.
You would connect to this thing through a cable. I think what you'd be doing is you'd be connected to the output of this thing through a cable. Do you know what I mean? Like you'd just be dumping either programs or grabbing output from whatever you're doing through the cable. But all that process, it would all have to be local.
I know, you're saying it would have to be local. Because I was going to say, I don't know if you're going to get a shift in network topology that could do this, that could handle anything like this at all. If you're having to access your main memory, you know, your address space, your program's address space over a protocol, I mean, that just adds like mountains of latency. So I'm more slanting on, yeah, it's going to be some sort of local interface to this thing.
That is true, and I agree. Like, it'll be a local interface, but at the same time, say 10 gigabit InfiniBand, and that's the cheap InfiniBand because you can get 40 gig now. Think how much faster 10 gigabit Ethernet too. Both of those are how much faster they are than the initial implementation of the PCI bus. So, I mean, from our perspective in 2009. The interconnect is way slower than the local bus. But at a certain point, the local bus becomes so preposterously fast that the interconnect, even at a tenth of that speed, is like, well, yeah, that's fast as you ever need it.
Well, I don't know, though. Here's the deal. Listen to this. You know that data slide shit that I was talking about earlier? So they have these, if you check it out, they've got some crazy statistics. This thing saturates completely a PCI Express, like X16, like a 16, you know, channel PCI Express bus, saturated.
Fusion IO can do a similar kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, so you're that right there. I mean, you're already talking about, and that's just that, and that's just to get your stuff to disk.
Yeah, that's true. You're right.
You know, so I mean, I'm thinking about, you know, when you're speccing, like I've had to spec a couple boxes that have to do, like, you know, just mountains of IO, and you know, that's the first thing I was looking at was the interconnects, especially when you're starting to get into multiprocessing and all these sorts of things.
Yeah.
You know, that becomes really important. What's happening? How are they getting to the memory? How are they getting to the bus? And all of these things. And when you start looking at those, I mean, there's no network topology that exists that can do it at the speed of a, you know, a hypertransport or one of those.
That's
right. So that whole thing is going to have to get ripped out and re-implemented somehow to be able to accommodate, you know, these memristors.
Yeah.
So that's my opinion. But I kind of wanted to take a quick, I do this too much, but I just wanted to go on a tangent because, so we're all talking about these things and it's all nanoscale, right?
Yeah.
And so what out there exists right now that are using these types of nanotechnologies, right? I know you've got, you know, CPUs that are using, you know, like 45 nanometer and these kind of things. So they're doing things that are at, you know, these really small scales. But what else is out there in the computing realm that's not a CPU that's using nanoscale technology?
Actually, I'd like to do my homework before I... that might be a good topic for next week.
Yeah, because I'm curious, because I don't think... And the reason I bring that up is think about these... the manufacturing process that is making a CPU. Right. You see, and the yield, you know, there's always this talk about the yield, right? From my understanding about, you know, when they're making CPUs, that they're making this wafer and, you know, they have to throw out a lot of this shit. So there's a ton of time and a ton of money put into making these very, very, you know, super dense wafers, and then they break it all up and do all this stuff with it, right? But, and those facilities to make those things cost, I have no idea.
Billions. They're in the billions, yeah.
Yeah. Now, if you were to look at like a hard drive manufacturer right now, like Western Digital or one of these other people, I mean, it probably costs them nothing, dude. They got, you know, some platters, some magnets.
No, I think that they have pretty difficult manufacturing process as well.
You do?
Oh yeah. So I guess I'll wrap up the memristor discussion with what, unless like you guys had other things to say, with the kind of the conclusions that I'd come to over the past few months about thinking about it. Unless I'll let you guys go ahead. Unless you had more to add. Okay. So that's interesting, Evil C, about the idea of like, well, you've got this huge data thing, and it really becomes more about the data than it is about the processor. And that's a really cool idea. I hadn't really considered that. I had more thought about it from operating systems and software development perspective about how does this change the landscape? Because, I mean, do you deal with files? Do you stream files? Do you have file pointers? Do you have objects in memory? Do you have all these things? Like, how do you... What are the paradigms that go along with such an idea?
I'll tell you, my first reaction to that would be that you don't have any of that anymore. You just deal with programs. Programs right. With localized, with their own... Essentially, what you deal with is... we're talking about is embeddable systems, because that's what you're going to have. You're going to have the same speed as any kind of embeddable system, right? But you can access it, like, lightning fast.
Right.
Does that make sense? All you're going to be dealing with is really... puzzle pieces that interconnect pretty much equally as fast, right? I don't know if I'm trying to vocalize it correctly.
Well, you
know what
I mean? I kind of see where you're going, but I mean, there's still a question of how will those programs, because you assume that each program will need to share data between each other.
Yes. Well, to share with the XML.
Oh, my God.
No, you're right, though. You got a good
kill
point,
me,
right?
Man. But yes. Only if we can use XSLT to style it. Oh, good Lord. That's the big question is like, how would programs, of course there's the, you still have data interchange issues about like how do programs communicate, and you'd have to nail that down. Like the idea of storing data in a certain format and then reading it back and storing it in another program in a different format, is that's not going to change. I don't think that's still a problem.
Well, I don't think the file system's not going to go away, is it? I mean,
I think it would. I mean,
why would you? No, because think about, I mean, you guys, I know you're a bunch of programmers, right? And so, like, who gives a fuck about security? But, like, I've never seen a developer be able to, they're like, give me root, make it 777. It doesn't work. that's like everything.
If you think about it, though, security is just an abstract. It is essentially you're just applying its security to some kind of structure, whether it be files or objects.
Well, what I was going to say is, I think where this whole thing is probably going to go. This is just me thinking about it. I mean, I have no idea, but that the file system will probably stay the same, and a lot of the knowledge that we've gained about how to build file systems will probably stick around. How we structure them on the device, on the storage device, might be a little different, and we might not think about those files anymore. We might think about them as just
pointers and things like that.
Objects, instead of opening a file and writing to it, you basically just allocate space for the object and immediately like serialize or deserialize in your software. And yet, this is the really interesting thing that I kind of come to the conclusion is that it would probably mean a big change in the way the CPUs are built, because at a certain point, the only volatile part of the machine is the resistor or the registers on the CPU. So what you have is at any point you could pull the power on the box, and when you do plug it back in and it does reboot, because there's still going to be a bootstrapping technique for when you first power a machine on. How are you going to maintain the consistency of the state, the memristor storage? And I think a lot of the research and journaling file systems is going to play a big role there. And that what you'll have in programming and this is the CPU instruction level, is this idea of breakpoints, where the CPU will say, it'll reach a certain transaction threshold and say, like, this is the breakpoint. And that breakpoint will get stored to memristor. Like, that'll get stored permanently because it'll be fast. It'll be like writing to RAM. So you store it. And then if the machine loses power and comes back up, it will just read from a given point on the memristor space and say, or an address and say, okay, well, what was the last transaction, what was the last breakpoint? And continue processing from there. And it's just a matter of making sure that the consistency of the data in storage is safe at those points, and that anything you do between there and in between is journaled, so that you can come back up and replay the journal to where you were. That's kind of where I saw this all going. And that means like some weird like stuff down deep within a CPU that hasn't really been played with in like 20 years, about like transactional processing, like setting up instructions for saying this is like save the transaction here, and to put those kind of semantics deep into the software. That also plays in the compiler design and language design and some other things.
But then and then the other thing, when you guys talking about objects and storing objects and all this thing, it made me think of like an object database.
Right. Yeah, that's where I think the file system would be much more like an object database.
Right. So you really think it's going to be like that? I mean,
I know not within the next 5 years. I think that if memory comes out and it's like it would say within 5 years or something like that, like racetrack memory or something like that, within the next 5 years, and it's really huge, like, you really truly get no trade-offs. Like, you get speed and capacity, and people just go like, you know what, I don't need hard drives anymore, I don't need RAM anymore, I just get this. and architecture starts, computing architecture really goes in that direction. If that happens in 5 years, 30 years from now, 25 years after that, all of those things will come to play. Right? It will come to light, and that people will rebuild operating systems. But there's no way that there's just so much time invested. I mean, we couldn't possibly rebuild that stuff that quickly, but I do think that's where it would go after that.
It's gonna be interesting, that's for sure.
I certainly feel on the object database thing.
Okay. So, yeah, that's my spiel.
Right on.
Okay. So what do you guys want to talk about? What's the coolest thing you saw this week?
We said that we were going to talk about Evil Seas, Wolfram Alpha, but I think that we should talk about Bing instead, just to fuck with them.
I get it. It's a competition search engine. My whole problem with that is, like, how often do you need it?
The only problem with Bing is that
the name,
the past tense of Bing is bung, and who wants to get who wants to get bung, dude?
So I bunged my name to see what came up.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, I got that from Scotty Got an Office Job. I don't know if you saw this, but anyway, it's pretty funny. so I'll say the best thing I saw this week, Scotty Got an Office Job. Hilarious. And I know it's old, but anyway, it's funny. So who cares?
I think the best thing I saw this week was everybody jizzing over the new iPhone OS, which really isn't that. I mean, it's a couple small steps forward, but everyone's just like going crazy about how nice it is.
Yeah, the new software and the hardware too is a little underwhelming, wasn't it?
Yeah, totally. Both of them completely underwhelming. Like, oh wow, I'm glad I got the 3G phone so that all I have to do is upgrade for free and I get the benefit. Like, ooh, I missed out on 32 gig and an FM tuner.
Yeah, really, yeah. Ooh.
Didn't it have a compass in it?
I forgot the compass. Yes, right. But you know, it's an iPhone, so I'll be able to use a compass for all of 2 hours before it drains its battery.
I thought I lost the woods.
Oh, I'm still lost in the fucking woods, and now I got no.
No, wait. I think you're missing. I could be totally wrong about this, but I thought the compass was an amazing addition, and here's why. Think about the fucking Google 3D map with the compass, and then you can find out what your heading is, and you fucking turn your phone, and you're like, oh, it looks like that. And you know what I'm saying?
Or you can ask a 10-year-old Boy Scout, and he can show you the right, you know.
Or you can look for the sun, and look at your watch, and then you know which direction you're pointing. Spank, I think you're right, because, imagine if you want to take a picture of something from all directions, now all you have to do is just walk around and take a picture of it. And now the phone knows which direction you were pointing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's got some really amazing applications. I think compasses are this is going to be the other phrase for the show. I think compasses are they're due for a refresh.
GPS can have a fucking compass.
I've done a lot of work with location tracking technologies, and the compass was in fucking valuable.
All right, that's interesting. Okay, I'll tell you what the coolest thing I saw this week technology wise, and it pains me to say it. Oh my god, it pains me to say it, but was Twitter, because. Yeah, Iranian Revolution and what's going on, and it's amazing how like something that's just so inane and is completely unwatchable, like Twitter in general, it's so annoying. And then you know shit hits the fan, and the ability to communicate is the most critical thing in someone's life, and that's kind of like a humbling thing. Like it's not necessarily like bits and bolts and shit like that. It's like, you know, when things are really, really going crazy, the ability to communicate, that's what it really is all about. It gets down to that. And I thought that was really cool. I have to admit, like, yeah, Twitter, there's, I mean, just seeing the communication coming out of Iran was amazing. Like, just people, like, I don't know, you know, someone's text message, like, I was just in the street, police are mercilessly beating people. It's something that you, like, having that broadcast to millions of people is not something that you would have had, like, just one human being able to do that even 10 years ago. Like you said, like, you could do it over the web, and yeah, that's true, and they did it, but nothing on this scale before.
Actually, you know, this reminds me of another cool thing I saw this week, which was I was watching some of the video from the D conference, as much as I hate to admit that. Yeah. But they had Ev and the other dude who co-founded Twitter on, and they were, and those guys actually mentioned the next, one of the things that they're going to start looking at is how to, and I guess this gets to your point, is how to verify Twitter IDs.
Hmm.
Right? Because they're saying that is a possible point of monetization for them. Because to your point, like, how do I could Twitter that I'm in Iran right now and that the police are
good point. With
blow jobs, right? But no one knows that.
Yeah.
But
that's
if they
a good
can,
point.
If they can actually verify I am who I say I am, then everything's changed. Then you've gone from a mob thing to a reporting thing.
To a news organization. Like a journalism kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that, I don't know. I just don't subscribe into any of these things because they're all relying on fundamental infrastructure pieces being in place, and when you know,
yeah, but when the infrastructure goes away, like, what do you have? But you could say that about anything. You know what I mean? Like, you could say that about roads. Like, when, you know, when the bridge collapses, what do you got? You got
nothing. Yeah, but the road's not fucking powered. I mean, there's no fucking power for a road. I mean, yeah maybe for the lights, but it's there. It's like it's built.
Yeah, you know, but you know, like, the electrical grid goes down for 2 weeks, and we're basically, like, back to Cro-Magnon, man.
Yeah, we're fucking feral little animals. We're going to start fucking eating each other and shit.
Totally.
The air comes down for half an hour in my office today, and everyone's like, what the fuck am I going to do now?
That's what happens, dude. So, I mean, that's my opinion on all of that social networking bullshit. It's like, ugh. It's just...
You're right. I mean, it's a total shame that, you know, like, three friends couldn't get together over, like, a telephone call and talk about technology. And you're right. I mean, it's so unstable that we really can't build anything on it.
I know. It's terrible.
Like distributed computing. I mean, you couldn't.
I know.
Yeah, you could never do anything with that because it's so,
it's just so flaky.
I'm going to go play Team Fortress 2 on my flaky network now.
All right, sweet.
Okay, see you guys.
All right, thanks, guys.
No problem.
All right, later. Bye.